Hello and welcome to the Otter Podcast. I'm your host, Madison Page. Today we are doing a deep dive into the world of AI and how to make a robot that does not fill others with a sense of impending doom. Today on the Otter, we are looking into the uncanny valley. What is it? Why does it happen? And how can we avoid it? So grab your servers, your processors, and the Mecha Frankenstein you've been building in your garage, and let's go. Hey guys, how's everyone doing? I hope you all enjoyed last week's episode. I have had several spirited debates about whether Betty and Barney Hill were actually telling the truth. And I'll be honest, I like to think that they were. This place can seem so bleak sometimes, and so unjust and so unfair. It can be nice to think we aren't alone, that maybe somebody else is doing things differently, and maybe things are working out better for them. I've been in a melancholy mood following the recent political events that have upset and affected so many lives. I'm sure I don't need to elaborate on what I'm referring to, but just know if you're listening to this and you feel the same way, I'm right there with you. I'm just a small podcast with not a lot of followers, but I can offer you some solidarity and a little time to take your mind off things before we get back to the good fight. So join me today as we talk about the Uncanny Valley. A listener actually requested to do a deep dive on this, so thank you, Ashley. I loved your request, and I got to learn so much about it. If you have a request of your own, I actually have a time block dedicated solely to listener requests, so you can email me at theotterpod@gmail.com, message me on Instagram or Facebook. You can even tweet me on Twitter, but as I've stated before, I can't figure it out. It may take a bit to get a response from me on Twitter. As always, if you like this podcast and you want to support me, a review and a follow go a long way. I'm just a one-man gang here, so all the music, all the editing, all the research, everything is taken care of by me. And I feed on encouragement, so don't leave me out here to starve. I'm like a houseplant. I need water, sunlight, and to be talked to regularly. Anyway, I'll get out of my little terracotta pot and get into the world of AI, animation, and the sense of horror and revulsion some robots make us feel. Okay, now picture this. It's Christmas Eve, 2004. You're just a kid, filled with sugar from a day of merrymaking with your family. You all bundle up in some footy pajamas, and you know you have to go to bed soon or Santa won't come. However, you beg and are granted the wish to watch just one more Christmas movie. Curled up on the couch with a soft blanket, a cup of cocoa, and those you hold dear, someone pops in the Polar Express into the DVD player. As the movie plays, you begin to have a feeling you've never experienced before. It's fear, but it's not fear. It's disgust, but it's not disgust. The characters on the screen with their lighthearted numbers on hot chocolate and the all-encompassing soothing voice of Tom Hanks do nothing to quell the sense of unease and danger you feel as that little bespeckled snot-nosed kid makes a quip. You pull the blankets over your head and refuse to come out until the movie is ended. Tears in your eyes, you dash to bed and hide under the covers from the dead eyes on the screen. Now, years later, you might look back on this incident with that embarrassing humor we all look back on from things from our childhood. The Polar Express was just a kid's movie. Maybe not a Christmas classic, but it definitely made its rounds on every TV station's 12 Days of Christmas marathons. So why did it scare you? Was it just childhood naivety? Too much sugar? Or did you experience a phenomena that has hit more than its fair share of innocent watchers of the fictional holiday program? That feeling of gut-knotting fear and sickness at the sight of some animated characters is actually part of a common phenomenon referred to as the Uncanny Valley. Now, I'd actually never heard of this, but I always kind of assumed it was a movie, and I just never looked into it. But this is a concept that was first introduced in the 1970s by Masahiro Mori, and I apologize if I'm pronouncing that wrong. Masahiro at the time was a professor at the Tokyo Institute of Technology. He coined the term to describe the point in which a robot becomes too human. He described that when constructing a robot and considering the appearance of it, one had to be careful. The more human a robot looked, the more likely it was to have a positive reaction up until a point. he illustrated a graph in which he plotted how the affinity for the non-human human would grow and grow until suddenly, the observer would experience a severe feeling of horror and disgust. Where once we regarded the robot with affection, we now only feel unease. To better illustrate this point, let me give you a direct quote from Masahiro's groundbreaking essay on the Uncanny Valley. One might say that the prosthetic hand has achieved a degree of resemblance to the human form, perhaps on a par with false teeth. However, when we realize the hand which at first looked real is in fact artificial, we experience an eerie sensation. For example, we could be startled during a handshake by its limp, boneless grip, together with its texture and coldness. When this happens, we lose our sense of affinity and the hand becomes uncanny. Now you may be asking, Madison, if this is about robots, why did you open with a story about the Polar Express? Well, my observant little listener, this is because since the publishing of the article, scientists have begun to realize that the Uncanny Valley is not restricted to just the robotics field. Any media in any form in which we are presented with something claiming to be human can fall under the effects of the Uncanny Valley. The Polar Express is one of these. The dead eyes phrase I used earlier has actually been used several times to describe the characters in the film. While the motion capture bodies looked pretty real, eyes can't be motion capture, and as such had to be animated separately. This led to a dead and unnatural look that caused many to refer to the characters as creepy or zombie-like. If you haven't seen Polar Express, don't worry, I'm sure you've run into it before in other media. Some top spots in the valley are held by films such as Tin Toy, whose animated baby Billy left many repulsed. Tintin, where people complained of the lifelike bodies that still had sausage fingers and beak-like noses, they were more fit for our cartoon strip than a character that was animated with having actual pores. And Final Fantasy, The Spirit Within, that garnered people to say that while the characters looked lifelike, they had mechanical movement and their eyes were dead. You'll see the eyes complain a lot. The inability to create the concept of life into eyes that are not alive has left more than one studio reaching for overly cartoonish characters rather than their lifelike counterparts. Sitting on the throne of the Uncanny Valley is the box office bomb Mars Needs Moms, a film so creepy it led to the studio going under. It's available on Disney Plus for those of you who are brave enough to watch it. This gut-wrenching revulsion that makes us want to turn off the movie and turn on an episode of Bob Ross instead can actually be corrected in the robot counterparts by going farther. Masahiro remarked that once the valley was reached, if the roboticist continued further and further into making the robot more and more human-like, eventually the feeling of positivity would return and the human would start to feel empathetic towards the robot. Unfortunately for animated movies, until they come up with a way to bring life to the eyes, it is generally recommended to stay on the oversized eyes, button nose, and disproportionate feature side of things. AI is the main focus of the Uncanny Valley discussions on the internet. As humans continue to try to build animatronic companions, we will continue to make equally terrifying ones that haunt the nightmares of everyone who sees them. Take, for example, Telenoid. Telenoid is a minimalist communication robot that has no limbs, a bald head, and a lifeless face. But for some reason, it has beady little eyes that stare and blink. I'm not kidding, I know it's probably a wonder of mechanics and they worked very hard on it, but it is the scariest thing I have ever seen. Look it up, it sits in a little stand and it's not like it's a tube with head, it has like little nubs where arms and legs would be. And when people hold it, they pick it up under its little armpits. Just look it up. You know what? I'm putting a picture on the socials. Enjoy those nightmares, courtesy of the Otter. Diego-san is another example of this. Developed by the University of California, San Diego's Machine Perception Lab, it was developed to help parents better communicate with their infants. Let me say that one more time, this robot is supposed to simulate an infant before I tell you it is 4 feet tall and weighs 66 pounds. It's a chunky boy. Listen, it's 4 feet tall. I'm 5'9". That thing is over half my height. That is so terrifying to me. Those who have interacted with Diego-san complain of false smiles and eyes that lack life, making the baby appear vacant and creepy. I'll post a picture of him too. We're just gonna have a jamboree of creepy robot pics on the socials. Maybe that will get us some more listeners. If you saw the sneak peek on this episode, what you were looking at was the facial expression of Actroid F. Actroid F was created by Japanese engineers Ekokoro in 2010. It was intended to replace screens and smartphones during long-distance calls by being a physical being that would sit in for the missing person. I actually watched a video with this where they explained that the models have webcams in their eyes that allow them to look around and see people. There are two models now, one is male while the original was female. The man in the interview actually made a point of saying if you took the wigs off, they were the same. They didn't make a special model for the male, they just put a different wig on it and it worked. However, the same problems arose. While the robots look like humans, as soon as you interact with them, you run into dead eyes and the restriction of movement in the face. So what makes us feel this way? We know we are looking at animated figures or a robot, so why does the almost humanness of their non-human natures fill us with such nausea? Well, the truth is, we don't know. There are several theories on it, however. One theory is the violation of human norms. Simply put, this refers to the non-human object's failure to live up to our human standards. When a robot looks less human, we tend to positively focus on the aspects that make it human. However, if a robot manages to look very human, then we focus on the aspects that make it inhuman, which causes unease. This theory boils down to us judging the robot as a human failing as a human, even though it is not a human. Another theory is the salience of mortality theory. This one is a bit more complicated. It states that the uncanny valley arises from our fear of death, fighting our culture-ingrained coping mechanisms for its inevitability. This theory holds that androids provoke fears of replacement, reduction, and annihilation. This robot looks so human, but it doesn't have human needs and fallacies. Am I going to be replaced at my job by a robot who doesn't need breaks? If I die, will my family just replace me with a robot and forget I ever existed? Are humans as a whole going to be wiped out with a mechanical population that doesn't need air? Additionally, disassembled robots provoke thoughts of battlefield and decapitation. The dead eyes make us wonder if humans are, too, just soulless dead creatures. A robot's jerky movements may elicit fear of losing control of one's body. Overall, the existence of androids brings to the front all of man's failings and fears, and that is what provokes the unease. The next theory is called the avoidance of pathogens. Now we all got real acquainted with this fear during COVID. Remember when coughing in the grocery store felt like a death sentence, even if it was just from a little tickle in the throat? Basically, because the robots looked as much like us, but are displaying some sort of defect that alerts the cognitive mechanisms in our brain that works to avoid contagion. Our brains see the jerky movement or the deadness behind the eyes, and it sets off the alarms in our heads that are like, hey, that's weird. It looks like us though, so it must be like us. But there is obviously something wrong with it. What if it's contagious? And this forms the basis of the feeling of revulsion we feel. I like this theory because it also kind of supports Masahiro's point that you could push past the uncanny valley by making the robot even more human-like, thus diminishing the alerting defect our brains are picking up on. Next, we have the challenge to human identity. This is basically man's pride served for dinner. If we're able to create more of us through robotics, then man ceases to be unique. Think of it like the Princess Diana Beanie Baby craze. Now hear me out, does anyone else remember that news story about the Princess Diana Beanie Baby that sold for $1,000? Once that got around, everyone had one and was pulling it out to sell on eBay, toting it as some rare and valuable thing. I even had one. Of course, this then proved how common it was. Now, eBay is still filled with several posts asking whole inheritances for this little purple bear, but Walmart will also sell it to you for $21.89. Like humans, the Princess Diana Beanie Baby was thought to be rare and priceless, something nobody would just have or be able to make. But then it was quickly proven that the market was flush with them. Just as the Princess Diana Beanie Baby, that is the last time I will say that, I promise, was made worthless and unremarkable, so too can humans be made useless and unremarkable when we can just make more and better versions. Okay, the last and final theory we are going to bounce through is called the discord between perceptual cues. This theory posits that the elements of an android's body that are clearly mechanical, clashing with the elements that are distinctly human, causes our brains to be unable to place the object into a category. This leads to a feeling of unease, as we are unable to immediately identify what we are even looking at. This actually has a really good example. If you've ever seen a picture of Sophia, the humanoid robot created by David Hansen. She got in the news in the recent years for agreeing that humans should be destroyed, which, go girl, do what you need to do. But Sophia has had a very human face that looks very lifelike. However, her creator left the back of her head open to a metallic dome that gives away how very much she is not human. The feeling you get when you look at her is exactly what this theory is describing, and I will also add her picture to the lineup. Now, these theories are all good and grand, but there is actually a heavy debate into if this phenomena is even scientific. Masahiro Mori himself said that he didn't explore the concept rigorously from a scientific standpoint, rather that he created it as advice to other roboticists. Carl McDermott, an associate professor of human-computer interaction at Indiana University, said that the graph is better used for learning a concept than actually studying a phenomena. He said, quote, "In my own experiments, I have consistently reproduced this effect within and across sense modalities. For example, a mismatch in the human realism of the feature of a face heightens eeriness. A robot with a human voice or a human with a robotic voice is eerie." When I was contacted about this, the listener specifically pointed to a theory she had heard that the uncanny valley originated from Homo sapiens hunting hominids. Now, hominids were early apes that were part of the human ancestral line. However, aside from a few Reddit posts and a creepypasta that was actually very good, I couldn't find substantial evidence for this. But what I did find was that our early ancestors were boinking about anything that moved and looked like them. That's right, you heard it here, folks. It wasn't just Homo sapiens and Neanderthals. Oh no, they were getting jiggy in the jungle with Homo erectus, Homo habilis, and any other Homo about. That's why humans are such a diverse species. Now, were they hunting early apes? Highly likely, but I just couldn't find much in support of our uncanny valley sensation originating from hunting and consuming those that looked like us. However, Ashley, dear listener, I don't want you to think me unfair, so I did find something kind of related. In 2009, a study was conducted using 5 monkeys. These monkeys were given 3 pictures. One was a realistic 3D monkey face, one unrealistic 3D monkey face, and one photo of a monkey face. The length of time the monkeys looked at each picture was then construed for either revulsion or preference. The monkeys looked less at the realistic 3D picture than either the unrealistic 3D picture or the real photo. This outcome was interpreted as meaning the monkeys had a negative emotional response towards the realistic 3D picture. As is the case with the uncanny valley, close yet imperfect resemblance seemed to induce aversion. This study seemed to suggest that neither human culture nor cognitive processes unique to humans could fully explain the feeling of unease in the uncanny valley. The aversion, therefore, seemed to be evolutionary in origin. Now, does that mean it came from our ancestors? We can't be sure, but the evidence is strong. So let's say you're a wannabe roboticist. You've got your frame built and your motherboard is programmed. How can you avoid the uncanny valley? Unless you intend to create creepy characters or evoke a feeling of unease, you can follow certain design principles to avoid it. Christopher Bartnek, an associate professor at the University of Canterbury in New Zealand, recommends avoiding bad character animation or behavior. Make sure your character's actions match the emotion they're portraying, but don't go overboard or instead it'll come off as a deception. Special attention must also be paid to facial elements, such as foreheads, eyes, and mouth, which depict the complexities of emotion and thought. This was a common complaint we saw. People can quickly identify dead eyes, rubber mouths, and unmoving foreheads as being something not very human. We're trained to spot even the slightest divergence from normal human movements or behavior, he said. Hence, we often fail in creating highly realistic, human-like characters. Well, that's all for this episode. So, what'd you think? Do you think it was an evolutionary response to something we came across that was trying to look human but wasn't? What about that pathogen theory? What do you think we can do to make robots look less terrifying? Let us know what you think on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and leave a review. The Otter Pod is now on TikTok. Come follow us there. Shout out to Ashley for the stellar suggestion. Want your own personalized show? Send me an email at theotterpod@gmail.com with your request, and whether you'd like me to mention your name, your alias, or nothing at all. Remember, this is the Otter Side, so give me something cool, creepy, or confusing to deep dive for you. If you like the show, leave us a review. They really help. If you don't have anything to say, let's just pick a buzzword from today's episode. Let's go with Princess Diana Beanie Baby. Yes, confuse all the people on the Apple Podcast Manager page and just leave a slew of 5-star reviews saying nothing but Princess Diana Beanie Baby. Maybe they'll think the podcast is just a front for a 90s culture cult. The Otter Podcast posts every other Thursday. Hopefully, Telenoid doesn't haunt anyone's dreams. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time on the Otter Side.